Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy, I don't even know. Happy something. Happy Olympics.
Yeah.
Olympics are fun.
Happy Melo de God Day.
Happy Carmelo saves the U.S. from utter hilarity and really unfortunate early ousting of the turn. They really might have lost without Carmelo. Carmelo was amazing, and the rest of the team looked like garbage.
Yeah, utter garbage, especially the Warriors players, which shouldn't surprise anyone based on what they did at the end of the playoffs.
I can't believe you brought that up, John.
I mean, it's kind of become my thing to just hate on these nouveau riche fan bases and programs, and you know what? They all end up disappointing eventually, so it's not like I've ever been proven wrong.
Fair enough.
All right. So I guess jumping into some football, I know first we figured we'd discuss some of the stuff on the site and jump into some Atlantic Division previews. We're not going to talk much Syracuse preview. We're going to save that for a couple weeks from now when we do a full hour-long-ish SU, you know, in-depth roster and everything else preview. But Dan, looking first at the miserable road trip that I prescribed for fans who might want to watch 24 different ACC games live this year, does any part of this road trip make you want to do it, or is this really just kind of the worst possible scenario for any fan of anything?
I mean, who wouldn't want to see William & Mary at NC State and then drive up to Syracuse or Colgate Syracuse and then drive down to NC Central at Duke? I can't imagine anyone not wanting to do that thing.
Well, then you forgot the kicker on that weekend.
Well, that would actually be fun. Ole Miss at versus Florida State is one of the highlights of week one, a week with many highlights. I would just probably rather, I guess I would probably rather go to the Colgate Syracuse game and fly it down and not ever watch NC Central play a game of football.
I mean, I feel like, you know, NC Central probably is analogous to somebody else that we willingly watch Syracuse play over the years. For myself, maybe Maine. For you, maybe it's Colgate, Stony Brook.
Sure. I mean, I have no idea what NC Central's like, but I've seen all
You're
those
bad.
Teams live, and yeah, don't need to see it. Don't need to see it in a game that I'm not don't have a rooting interest in.
Fair enough. For those who didn't read it, it's basically a large article saying how you could road trip around the ACC for the entire season. The only parameters are that you have to drive everywhere. You have to see all 14 stadiums. I also added in the caveat that you have to go to the Bristol Motor Speedways game in week two, and you have to go to the ACC championship. The whole thing gets more complicated by the fact that the conference stretches from Boston to Miami. There's a game in Texas in there. Again, there's a game in Tennessee in there. You end up doubling back from North Carolina to Syracuse several times. The whole thing's a bit of a disaster. I'm not apologizing for it, but yeah. Funnish read if you're into that sort of thing.
And Houston gets an ACC invite.
Yeah, and that's the best part at the end. Houston gets smoked by Louisville and then gets invited to the ACC.
I have seen, not like distrust, but I have seen like, I don't know, just mention of like, hey, why wouldn't the ACC invite Houston? And there are reasons for that. There are plenty of reasons.
I've got various reasons. Number one, that if anyone's talking about it, it means it's not going to happen.
Number two is, hey, does Notre Dame want to play Houston? No? Okay, we're not inviting Houston.
Next. Yeah,
that's number one. That's like step one, two, and three of, hey, are you going to get an ACC invite? Does Notre Dame like you? No? All right, well, move on.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of people still think that like the rest of the schools can have any say in this. I mean, I think everyone's of the opinion that Notre Dame would prefer Texas over anybody else. I think everybody would prefer Texas over everybody else. I think Texas is far-fetched for a lot of reasons, but I think Texas is also more realistic than Houston, which I know sounds silly, but is probably true anyway.
Yeah, it's just like, there's no way the ACC would do anything that would take away the possibility of Notre Dame joining at some point, unless like that became a total 0% chance. So Yeah.
And since it's not going to, we just kind of continue on. I don't think it's ever going to get to a 0% chance.
Not with the extension of the grant of rights through 2036. That's ACC. If they're going anywhere, as we say, whenever this comes up, they're going to the ACC for the foreseeable future. So feel good about that.
Take that, Big Ten.
Yeah.
Conference they were also never joining, ever.
Right. Yeah, Big Ten. We got you there.
Yeah. All right.
Shut up about your money.
So other things going on in Syracuse. D-line was kind of the focus today, and I found it interesting, just kind of some of the reports out of camp. It seems that Chris Slayton, defensive tackle, was getting some reps at defensive end. It seems like they're going to be, rather than differentiating between right and left sides of the line, they're going to be differentiating strong and weak side. It seemed like they'll have different packages, for run stopping, maybe for some speed rushing on the edge. It seems that they'll be able to rotate in a lot of guys, which makes sense. You put Slayton at an end, you could potentially have a three-man line of Slayton, Caton Samuels, and Stephen Clark, getting those three on the field at the same time, and then grabbing maybe one of the bigger defensive ends, probably John Wilson, if the Colorado transfer, if I had to guess, in a package like that. While in others, it seems like a lot of the newer guys, your Joshua Blacks and Kendall Coleman's, and along with Jake Picard, Kenny Ruff, those are the types of guys that you would see in more of a speed rushing package. I think we're talking about it in the comments. I think the big plus for me, at least in a situation like this, is that Babers, not only does he have a system which is different than the previous regime at Syracuse, but he's willing to adapt it, adjust it. He understands the limitations of his personnel, and he's willing to try new things within the very loose confines of his system. And not that I want to talk about Baylor at all today, but that was one of the kind of biggest advantages of Baylor's system under Art Briles, and that was just this malleability to be able to do certain things. I mean, case in point, the five running back game last year, where they basically didn't have a quarterback and managed to create a whole new offense on the fly, and still put up almost 600 yards of offense. So I think with luck, Babers has taken the right notes from that period of his career, and it seems so far like he's willing to, and he's willing to wait on implementing maybe everything he wants to, while still getting the most out of Syracuse's players on campus.
Yeah, and with the D-line, it's been such a depth issue over the last couple of years that it kind of necessitates this creativity and putting guys in positions where maybe they aren't playing their natural spot, but there are just kind of limited numbers there. Obviously, the Dijon Wilson transfer helps, and having Jake Picard coming off of redshirt's nice, but there isn't like a ton of experience. Like, we have very few upperclassmen. So it's just going to have to be a makeshift unit, but it does seem like everyone is fine with that and adjusting to that, and it should be an interesting one to watch. It's definitely one of the parts of the team that we know the least about, at least in terms of personnel. Obviously, everything's new in terms of scheme.
Yeah, I think the personnel question marks are what really gave a lot of people pause, including myself and you and others. But I know national folks that have talked about Syracuse, I think it's pretty common knowledge that defensive line is rough. It doesn't mean that it's going to be bad. I think it's going to be – I think it's going to take some time to round into form. And this is obviously when you'd want a schedule to be able to allow it to do that. So Louisville early, Notre Dame early, and USF and UConn early don't really help that a ton. But hopefully, the team's able to kind of, figure out at least portions of itself against Colgate, so that they're ready a week later in that Friday night showcase against Louisville. You mentioned how young everybody was, though, and actually talked to another article that was up on the site just about, it's not to write off this year, to look ahead, but, 2017 is looking extremely promising. Because of all the youth. I mean, you look up and down the depth chart, there's very few seniors, there's only a handful of juniors. That youth really hurt us last year. It might be damaging this year, but You know, next year when you have a pretty well seasoned defensive line, a aggressive group of linebackers, you've got a secondary that could round into form and really couldn't be worse than they were last year. In all honesty, then you've got, I mean, that's just on the defensive end. Then you look at the other side of the ball. You'll have an offensive line that, again, is kind of coming into its own as that vaunted class of 2015, you know, continues to assert itself. You'll have, hopefully, you know, a healthy Dungy, returning Steve Ishmael. You'll have Irv Phillips. You'll have Fredericks, Dante Strickland. Like, there's a – it's not – again, it's not to look ahead to 2017, but it is to point out that, you know, we might take our lumps in 2016, but there could be a great payoff next year, obviously.
Yeah, it actually kind of dovetails nicely because, you know, you could have had a situation where this year was going to be a more senior-laden team, but you have it learning a whole new system where, you know, Babers has said pretty consistently the adjustment's like a year and a half before things really start to click. And that would have been unfortunate because then you would have had a young team in year two or year three, where now it almost seems like the team will be a pretty veteran group by the time it's truly learned what it's doing on the field in Babers' system. On both ends of the ball. So that might actually work out nicely where we see a peak right at the right time. And obviously it'll be helped by Babers getting his recruits in and the types of guys that he wants to run his system, because obviously right now he's kind of working with what he's got, which he's proved to be good at in the past, since he's never actually run his own system with his own players in his two stops previous. So, yeah, I mean, we could see a pretty nice, like, season two breakout. Doesn't seem like that crazy, and you know, Syracuse did it before under Marone, so that would definitely be nice. And just, you know, year one, I think pretty much everyone is going to be fairly open-minded with the Babers system, and there's, you know, it's hard to not have a grace period or a honeymoon period with a new coach in college football. Year two, year three is where the pressure starts to dead on, and if that's when the team is best equipped to have a breakout, I mean, that's awesome. So hopefully, I mean, I would love to see the team win this year, but if it doesn't, you know, I think we all understand the situation. A breakout 2017, 2018 would be pretty great, and I think we're all looking forward to see what happens with a lot of these guys. Like you said, Dungy and Ishmael will be junior, senior next year. Not to look too far ahead, but it does seem like things are lined up pretty well for those seasons.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, it's not as if Babers, I mean, I'm sure he didn't do this, any job he was up for, it's not like he sat there with a depth chart and figured things out. But that said, because of roster changes, because of how things kind of shook out at the end of last year, and from what we've seen so far this spring, it just seems like, yeah, Babers quickly figured out what he had on his hands and what he could use right now and what he could use in the future. And I think, you know, that's, again, it's not to blast the old staff too much. It's just to point out that, you know, an experienced, you know, head coach can come into a program, especially if he has a system that he knows that he recruits for and he needs certain players for. He can quickly walk into a program and kind of, you know, ascertain what's on hand and what will be on hand. And I think, you know, once again, Babers has done a really nice job of figuring that out. And he's got fans excited. And you know what, I think, and I hope this for everyone, but I know this for myself, and I know this for you too. And, you know, because of how hard the schedule is, you know, 4-8, 5-7 is very much in play. Now, that might not look like a big improvement for folks, but I think, you know, it stands to reason that we're going to see a nice step forward this year, even if the wins don't come, and that's going to set us up again, you know, very well for what should be a positive gain next year. Not helped by facing LSU, but whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely all about just seeing tangible progress and evidence of a real step forward on the field. And, I mean, a lot of people have said, not just us, others around college football, like the wins might not come right away, especially because, you know, the schedule isn't the easiest. And obviously, just any first-year head coach isn't going to step into success right away, with, you know, inheriting what Syracuse is. But yeah, I think everyone around the fan base seems to have fairly decent expectations in terms of, like, not getting too far ahead of themselves, which is nice. I haven't seen too much, like, craziness, which is good.
I would agree. I think there's one other item I wanted to bring up in the first half of this. ACC is going to be having its athletic directors vote on a football scheduling structure on Friday. That should be interesting. There's been a couple of proposals sent around. I know over the weekend, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was talking to now former Georgia Tech athletic director Mike Babinski, now at Purdue somehow, which I don't know why you'd make that move, but whatever. I know he's a Midwest guy, but besides that, I don't know why you'd make that move. But yeah, the proposal of this 8+2 thing really kind of had me a bit riled up on Sunday. I know I've been talking about it since, talking about it on Twitter with folks today. I don't mind 9. I'd be fine with the status quo as well. I just think that 8+2 seems stupid. It's mathematically infeasible. It completely ignores the contracts that are currently written up. I mean, you look at a school like Virginia Tech that has, you know, 29 dates out of 32 secured already through 2024. That puts them at a financial disadvantage, and it basically penalizes them for getting out ahead of things, while it rewards schools like Syracuse and to an extent Boston College, a couple others, for really not getting out ahead of it. The 8+2 model also really only caters to 4 schools in the ACC. You know, that's Florida State, that's Clemson, that's Georgia Tech, and that's Louisville, all the schools that have SEC rivals. So to me, I don't think it really helps anybody else. I think that it potentially takes a win off the table and not at the expense of more conference games. Like, it's one thing, I feel like a 9-game schedule, if you're going to have more conference games, I can better stomach taking a win off the schedule. I can better stomach taking, you know, adding to inventory at the same time for an ACC network. But if you're going to do it this way and force teams into these awkward marriages of 2 power conference programs and their non-conference schedule, when that's not going to happen based on, again, math, you know, do you really is it really worth trying to sell us on, you know, Wake Forest, Washington State, or Boston College, Arizona, you know, at University of Phoenix Stadium or some, you know, nonsense like that, when instead you could have, you know, an extra ACC game of Boston College versus Pitt. I mean, you'd have that every couple of years instead of every, like, 6. And then BC and Pitt play, and no matter where it is, it's going to be an ACC-owned game. I just think that the 8+2 logic fails pretty much every litmus test, while at least the 9-game and the 8-game with the, you know, mandatory 1 power conference program thing that's already in play just seems to make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I think you hit on all the major ones. 8+2 just seems so messy. It obviously hurts schools like Syracuse, BC, whomever else, who, you know, someday I'd love to be in a position where Syracuse can play 2 power conference schools and not worry about how it affects the team's outcome. But, like, for the next couple of years, and obviously I don't think this would be put into a place like in 2017, but it just, you know, you're taking a school. I mean, it might not actually change all that much in terms of how Syracuse realistically schedules now, because they're very bad at it, but you're just burying those teams that could use the extra win to prop themselves up a little bit. 9 games I'm fine with. I almost prefer that to the 8, just because, and I know that kind of contradicts what I just said, but at least you're playing a conference opponent, and you know it helps unite what seems like 2 pretty disparate divisions at this point, since, you know, we only play Miami every 6 years, we're only hosting them every 12 years, etc. Just seems like 8+2, like you said, it's just pandering to those 4 schools. And I get, like, wanting to help, you know, help out Clemson and Florida State where you can, but
they're free to schedule like that anyway.
Yeah, and I get that putting 9 games gives them less flexibility, but, you know, they're already scheduling pretty much 2 marquee games every year. It's not like Clemson plays South Carolina and 3, you know, terrible teams. This year they're playing Auburn.
They usually play Auburn or Georgia. Yeah,
so they're already doing similar things. So, and they're free to do that going forward, even if there's another ACC game. So yeah, I really hope the 8+2 doesn't come to fruition. It just seems like a really, it just seems like a sloppy thing. And I get wanting more attractive teams for the network that's coming up. But wouldn't, like, we see what happens with the bowl games every year. The revenue for even, like, the crappy, uninteresting bowl games is pretty crazy. They all pull good ratings in compared to, like, the rest of you know, even the college football calendar, even if it's, like, you know, Boston College versus Cal in the Emerald, you know, Almond Bowl or whatever the ridiculous bowl is.
The first round of the MLB playoffs.
Right, no, yeah, every bowl game that features, like, any team of any prominence does crazy ratings. why wouldn't you want more ACC teams in bowl games? Like, the A plus two could be the difference between Syracuse winning five games and Syracuse winning six. And, you know, Syracuse in the Pinstripe Bowl for the 8,000th time doesn't seem that interesting, but both those games rated really well. So I just see it feel like, you know, if you're going to do something, I much prefer nine, because at least then, you know, the extra game you're adding also makes it feel like the ACC is one conference rather than this, like, weird divide that it does now. I'd also be okay if they just stuck with eight until the hand is forced. But, yeah, there's definitely some, like, Syracuse bias in there because it's in a different situation than, like, if we were Louisville and we were winning eight, nine games every year. But A plus two just seems like an unnecessary step.
Yeah, I mean, when I was talking to some Florida State fans and some Clemson fans about it, those fans seem to think that, you know, their retort, and I'm not saying they're wrong, like, just outright, I'm just saying that it's kind of flawed, is just, they're saying, you know, why would we cater to the bottom dwellers in the conference when making scheduling, you know, considerations? They said, well, like, to counter that, why would you only cater to the top teams either? Why not? Like, A plus two only helps a small number of people. I don't think that... I think nine helps the lesser teams to an extent. I think that eight helps the lesser teams to an even greater extent. But, like, to me, I just, you know, like we said, I think, you know, self-determination, allowing these schools to schedule home games and schedule wins to build themselves up. I mean, I've always been a proponent of the rising tide lifts all boats mantra, especially when it comes to this conference in football. It just makes a lot more sense that if you have, you know, 10 or 11 bowl teams, I mean, A, it makes you more money anyway, and B, you know, eventually better players start showing up in recruiting, so then the teams actually get better. I mean, you know, you look at how the SEC schedules. The SEC isn't scheduling the way the ACC is proposing you schedule, and they do just fine. And, you know, they're bad teams scheduling wins so they can still go 6-6. No one's really, you know, running them over the coals for that. If conference realignment's taught us anything, it's that it's about, you know, quantity, not quality. I mean, that's why the Big Ten added Maryland and Rutgers. That's why, you know, even the ACC added, you know, Pitt when it was mired in a long-term mediocrity, and us, we were just kind of getting our sea legs again as a program before dropping back down. Like, it was about the overall inventory, and you're not going to make more money with an ACC network because of that Florida State USC game you had versus, you know, that Wake Forest Elon game. It doesn't matter. It's either way that those same amount of games existed, except now because you had the Florida State USC game or the Clemson-Ohio State game, you only own one of those. So to me, it doesn't make any sense why you would now compromise all that and everything and all the knowledge we've picked up throughout this realignment process and then just throw it out the window.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. But, you know, hopefully they just make the right choices. As we said last week, the ACC's done things fairly well over the last couple years to this point, so hopefully they continue to and don't do something just kind of weird and, like, just bizarre. It's just, like, a really strange path to go down, especially when the schools that it helps can just kind of do what they do already.
Right. And, yeah, I think what is helped here, too, is that it's not the – and that's not to insult coaches. It's just more to say that it's good that the coaches aren't making these decisions. It seems like some of the athletic directors are going to be consulting with coaches before they make their votes, but I think it's better to see the athletic directors who were paid to see things from a bird's eye view in these situations make this call versus coaches who I feel like would base it on what they can see in the near term, what they can see in terms of their you know, ability to win now. And I could see that tinging their efforts. I think that with the ADs voting, there's a lot more of a holistic view applied, and there's a lot more, I think, long-term thought put into it, which is helpful.
Yeah, no, for sure.
All right, so I guess we got a little bit of early halftime. That way we kind of have a clear demarcation between the two parts of the show. So what have you been drinking, Dan?
I had a couple of new things this weekend. the newer stuff I had. I tried out Captain Lawrence's Effortless Grapefruit Session IPA, which I really enjoyed. Super refreshing, not too overpoweringly grapefruity, but also, like, you definitely got the flavor there, pretty well balanced. So Captain Lawrence always does good work. So that was nice. I had the Apricotopus by Parallel 49 Brewing. I don't even know where they are located, but this was it was an apricot sour. Oh, they're in Vancouver. Wow.
I thought I recognized that name.
Yeah, I did not know that. It was delicious. Just really delicious beer. Very, very, very sour. Very, very, very apricot. So if you like those two things, I guess keep an eye out for that. I had never seen it before, and apparently it's Canadian, so I don't know how well available they are. And then also had some more local things that I've had before. Two Roads Honey Spot IPA, one of my favorites. The white IPA from the Dyes Up in Stratford, Connecticut. I had Other Half's IPA, always very solid. And the Billy Halfstack IPA from Single Cut, one of my favorite breweries here in New York, which I bring up a lot. One of their best IPA efforts. So really solid week on the IPA front, I'd say. And then that nice apricot sour, which was a little different.
Very nice. So for me, I had a bunch of different things. The brewery, I had their Flanders Giant. It's a bourbon barrel-aged Flanders Red. I felt it was a little heavy-handed on the bourbon versus Flanders, but still enjoyable beer. Hefty, like 14% or so. Had from Mumford Brewing around here, Unpresidential IPA. It was kind of an East Coast-style IPA, but very, very good. Juicy, as most would expect from an East Coast-style IPA. One of my favorite beers anywhere is Beechwood Brewing's Amalgamator. Again, excellent IPA from them. They put it out a few times a year. Had Mrs. Stoutfire from the brewery, kind of a oak-smoked stout that the brewery put together with Beechwood a few years back, and they re-released some bottles this year in an archive sale, so grab one of those. The brewery also has their Frucht series. It's just like fruited Berliner Weisses, and they had the Frucht Apricot that you would have really liked, Dan. It's very enjoyable. Still hanging around only about 4.4%. But yeah, drank really big, had a nice sour back end on it, and smelled great. What else? Went to Monkish around here, had their Danfino 2. One of their East Coast style IPAs. They're brewing a collaboration with Arizona Wilderness Brewing Co. Over in Phoenix. So Arizona Wilderness had their Pine Mountain Sour Pale Ale on tap at Monkish, which is very good. Had Arizona Wilderness, not this past time I was in Arizona, but time before that. Went to the brewery, cool spot. They make some good beers. Also had Monkish's Jolly Pumpkin collaboration. Cucurbitophobia is that apparently is the fear of pumpkins. It's a saison. Enjoyed that.
I should know that it's a thing, but like, why is that a thing?
I don't know. I mean, there's like fear of things that no one should ever have, but yeah, that's a thing for some reason.
Fear of large orange gourds.
Speaking of, I saw that pumpkin is already out on shelves.
Oh, yes, it's fall, guys. It was only 95 degrees with 1,000,000% humidity today. I shouldn't complain, because pumpkin is like one of my favorite beers, and I drink it like all the time during the fall. But like, make me wait for a little bit. Yeah. Make it special. It's out for like 8 months now. Like,
I saw. Yeah,
give it to me for like four.
I saw there's already a Halloween costume section at Costco. Like, no. Can't do this, people. Yeah, and then I also grabbed that New Belgium Fat Tire and Friends box where they did a couple different variations of Fat Tire. So I had the Fat Pale Ale that they did with Rheingeist, which is up in Cincinnati, and then the Fat Wild Ale they did with Avery out in Colorado. Both were all right. Nothing amazing, but good beers just the same. Yeah, that was my beer intake for the weekend.
Yay, beer.
Yay, beer. Okay. And now we talk Atlantic Division. I think we can just go alphabetically. So the Boston College Harambes are up first. And Dan, what do you think? Are the Harambes going to win for their namesake this year, or are they going to fail miserably?
I think they're probably not going to. I don't know. I wouldn't feel great if I was the unfortunately deceased Rilla. If I would wish that a better team would have taken up this this mantle for me. But of course, I am also dead. So, I assume Harambe would be a Bearcats fan, right? Like, so maybe he's got more pressing issues.
He does.
Like, he's identified himself. He's identified the Big 12.
Or get elected to president at this point, because Harambe is outdrawing a lot of candidates.
Yeah, that's true.
It's way to go.
Yeah, BC. I don't know. Like,
I don't buy him.
I don't buy him either. Their offense was just so bad last year, and they lose Don Brown, and I just don't think statistically their defense can be as good as it was last year. Like, even if they're still really good, odds are they just can't be as good. And if they take a big step back on the defensive end, like, Patrick Toles had some nice moments at Kentucky. I'm not buying him as, like, the savior of the program. I mean, he was pretty bad last year overall. There's a reason why Kentucky just was fine letting him go. They have some decent backs, but no one was all that productive. Like, they have a lot of guys I feel like that could be nice complimentary backs, but no one that's
going
to be a workhorse. I guess Hellman was hurt last year, right?
Yeah, so, he was hurt, like, early on last year, I think.
Yeah, and Rouse is okay, and Miles Willis is okay, but, like, there's not a lot of, like, not a lot to get you excited. And this team lost to Scott Schaefer's team last year. Like, yeah. It's tough. It's tough to get all that worried about BC. I do think Adazio is, like, I almost feel like he might be, like, a better coach than he ends up, like, looking if he gets fired after this year. Like, he might be one of those guys who ends up, like, landing at a G5 job and ends up being really good at that level. But BC's a tough one, and he got a lot done those first couple years. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not buying on DC. BC, not DC. yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know we talked about it, you know, years ago. I think, you know, Adazio's a good coach, but I think he might end up being underrated at the end of his time at BC. But, you know, you look at the early returns, he came in to a team that, when Spaziani was fired, there were 18 seniors on that roster that Adazio inherited, and of course he went 8-5. Then the next year, you know, he lost a bunch of different players, but he didn't lose enough to really derail the team, so they went 7-6. But you saw the diminishing returns on the recruiting front. You saw them struggling to really bring in, you know, much outside the local three-star guys. I think BC, for the most part, you know, you're looking at the Northeast. It seems like they recruit Ohio and Pennsylvania pretty well or well enough. But, yeah, they just didn't seem like they were expanding upon recruiting enough or bringing in those types of talents, and especially a quarterback, where I think that they're just a tire fire in terms of being able to build depth. I mean, now you're looking at two of the last 3 years, they've had to bring in, you know, talent externally to make up for the fact that they don't know how to recruit a quarterback. I think they haven't recruited a receiver in what feels like a decade. I think the running backs are going to be good, but again, like, Adazio's not recruiting well. He had to, you know, in the last couple of years, he's either cleaned house or his good coaches left. I just think there's a lot more worry than even the schedule can kind of glance over. I mean, they do face a pretty easy slate here, but at the same time, like, you look up and down this thing, I got three assured wins. I mean, this is still, you know, how you schedule if you want to try to make a bowl with a bad team. You got at UMass, which is a win. You got Wagner. You got Buffalo. They got a Connecticut game that, you know, could, based on how UConn's doing in late November, you know, could basically be a BC home game. BC is having a solid season. Overall, I think, you know, this is the right way to schedule for a bad team. But I don't think that should cover up that this is a school that has not built depth very well on the offensive side of the ball at all. We'll see how they do on defense. You know, when you lose, obviously, your staff's best coach, and then you also replace your offensive coordinator with Scott Leffler, who I was never really all that impressed with at Virginia Tech. I'm wondering what I'm supposed to be excited about and why everybody seems to be willing to buy into 6 or 7 wins here.
Yeah, you brought up the receivers. You know what's bad is when your leading returning receiver had 17 catches for 233 yards and 2 touchdowns.
That's worse than
zero. It is. And it's worse when that leading receiver was also your team's leading receiver last year with those numbers.
Yeah.
Not great. And one of those catches is a 66-yard touchdown. So, like, take that away, which...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No, like, take away... Because I did this with that, what was that article I wrote a couple weeks ago? Using the Pythagorean win expectancy. And if you take away the stupid 70-0, like, what was it, Howard? Who the hell did they face last year? No, the 76-0 Howard win. Like, yeah. This team was miserable.
And that was like week one, so it was just after that. If I remember correctly, that was week one.
It was week two. Week one, they beat Maine 24-3.
They played Maine and Howard back-to-back weeks?
Yeah.
You do, UBC.
Well, they lost. They screwed up some non-conference scheduling somewhere. Oh, no, it was the New Mexico State thing, I think. Yeah, like, the end of the game broke into that.
BC was playing New Mexico State.
Also, BC went to Las Cruces.
Yes, they did. I remember that.
Like, what, the only what power in the world? Conference. The only power conference team that isn't Texas Tech that would ever go there.
And Texas Tech only goes there because they don't get yelled at for throwing tortillas, I'm guessing, there. Because, like, if you throw tortillas at New Mexico State, does anyone see you throw tortillas? I don't think so.
No.
I'm pretty sure that's an existential question that we all know the answer to.
All right, Dan, so looking at this schedule... what do you see from a wins perspective? Because I've got 4.
Let's see. I'm going to assume they're going to beat UMass because UMass, but that's not a given. Like, that's not a total given.
That's also after being in Ireland in week one.
That's also tough, and then it's like a regular turnaround too. I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt and say they should beat UMass. UMass is still not very good. They had some signs of life last year, but we'll give them that one. They'll beat Wagner, I assume. Buffalo, they should win.
If we're talking about your team like this, that means you suck.
No, like they are the overwhelming favorites to beat Buffalo, but like, would anyone be shocked?
No.
And then I'm gonna say 3. I'm gonna say Wake gets them at home. I'm going to say 3 wins.
You and I know Wake has no home field advantage whatsoever.
Yeah, but BC doesn't have BC doesn't have any advantage anywhere. So I'm going to say Wake gets a late win at home. They do it for Clawson. I assume Clawson will still be there next year like, you're Wake. Like, what are you doing? So, yeah, I'm going to say 3 wins.
See, I'm vacillating between 3 and 4. I think... when you go to Vegas, there's 2 bets I would make. The under on BC and the under on Wake, since Vegas...
Is Wake really at 6.5?
Yeah, Wake's really at 6.5, and then I think BC is somewhere around 6.
That's crazy. I'd feel better about BC just like I trust Adazio.
Right.
Like, a little bit. Like, it wouldn't... If BC won 6 games at the end of the year, it'd be like, you know what, I didn't see that coming in, but like, it doesn't totally shock me. Wake, it would surprise me a lot. Wake, I would be very surprised.
See, I think Wake's getting better. I guess we'll skip to Wake, and then so this is once again disrespect because we're skipping Clemson. We'll come back, I swear.
we'll come back for you, Wake Forest. It's like the ACC. After the ACC, eventually, let's say Wake Forest go. Notre Dame really wanted both UConn and Houston. First thing that popped in my head. Yeah, they really want both, but we're going to add you back when we get to 18. Yeah, Wake, that's what we're going to do. Actually, yeah, just go hang out in the Sun Belt for a bit, and we'll be back for you.
As I've said before, I would trade Wake for Vandy, but the SEC would never take that trade.
No, they wouldn't, and I think you do make that trade, just to mix up the stateness a little bit, just so you're not 4 in North Carolina.
And Nashville is a fun road trip.
See, it'll actually never happen because apparently Wake Forest is kind of the intermediary school that like kind of does all the like negotiations from what I've heard. So they kind of do have a role. Just winning football games is not that role.
Wellman's also been there what like 21 years
as AD. Yeah, he's like a well-renowned AD. So they play their part.
Fair enough. All right. So the Demon Deeks. I have some faith in Wake Forest this year, not going to lie.
Look at you. You're buying into the narratives here.
I'm not buying into the full narrative, though. Because to be honest, I know we talked about this like a month ago. I could see six for Wake if everybody stays healthy. And that's the problem for Wake, especially when they play Syracuse, is that no one can stay healthy. I mean, one of the running theme of each of the last four Wake-Syracuse matchups has been a crucial injury at the worst possible time for Wake Forest.
Yeah, I mean,
like every single game.
Yeah, no, they got totally hit hard. I feel like what we were talking about before with Syracuse, like things just not lining up. Like if they had that defensive backfield from 2 years ago, it just like they'd be in really good shape. But they had that weird thing where they had like a really nice portion of their team, and it came at the same time where their offense like could not gain a rushing yard against anyone. So like it just seems it didn't line up that well. I think there's a chance John Walford is good if he stays healthy. He's had moments. He like kind of looks the part. I don't know. I feel like they haven't brought in like enough overall talent where I feel great about them really making that step forward into like bowl contention. And I know that's not what you're predicting either, because you just told me you wanted to gamble on them not doing that. But yeah, I think they probably do have the more impressive offensive pieces. Tortez Lewis is a really solid receiver. Cam Serene. How do you pronounce Serene's last name? Serene?
I'm going with Serene.
Serene, okay. They have five returning guys that have more receiving yards than BC's best. There's that. But like, and a couple of those guys are like actual players.
But like Wake still hasn't had a running back in a very long time.
No, it's been... They had a guy who got suspended like to the beginning of, like, I think Clawson's first year, and people acted like he was good, and then he came back, and he just wasn't good either. They bring back a lot of their offensive line, which is nice, and that's been, I mean, it's nice if they improve. They've been dreadful for a while. Yeah. So that's always, like, we've talked about that in the past, too. Like, yeah, it's nice to bring back experience at the O-line, but, like, when you have a totally porous O-line, like, you are also betting on those guys. Yeah, you're also betting on those guys improving. I think their defensive front is actually kind of interesting. Wendell Dunn and Duke Ejiofor are interesting players. They have Zeke Rodney, who I remember being a pretty big recruit. I think we were after him. So they have some interesting pieces there. Their linebackers take a big hit. Brandon Chubb was really, really good. He's gone.
I like Markel Lee.
He's a nice player. He made some plays. And their defensive backfield, which was, like, I'm trying to remember last year, their numbers were, like, okay, but as soon as, like, a decent player stepped in against them, they got shredded. Right. Versus, like, a couple years ago when they actually had good corners. But I don't know. I don't think it's totally hopeless. I think that their talent just needs like an overall lift. But they also, they schedule okay for success. So maybe they can win like four or five games. I mean, I'm as a brother of a Wake Forest senior, I won't be rooting against them except for when they play Syracuse, but I'm still like very calm. I don't even know if I'd call it cautiously optimistic. I think there's a chance that they have their best year under Clawson. And they probably need to hang on to Clawson unless things get, like, really bad, just especially based on, like, all the injury problems. And, you know, it hasn't been an easy go of it for him. But I'm kind of, you know, I have to see it first. And just the last 3 years just haven't looked good.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because, like, we see Wake through the lens of Syracuse fans. And when you see Wake through the lens of Syracuse fans, all you see is a team that loses to us no matter how bad we are. And so it's hard to really differentiate that from, you know, the rest of Wake's resume. I mean, look at last year's results, and you do see an improving team. I see a team that lost by 7 to bowl team Indiana, 8 to a very good Florida State team, lost by 13 to us somehow. They got smoked by North Carolina. They did not do well against NC State, but then the last four... 1 point loss to Louisville, you lost by 21 at Notre Dame, you lost by 20 at Clemson, and you lost by 6 to Duke. A couple things roll a different way. This Wake Forest team is maybe 5-7 and like a sleeper pick to go like 8-4. So, I mean, I don't think that they're 8-4 talent. I don't think they are or were last year either. But I do see a team that's improving. I think the running back situation is going to be bad once again. I think that that just harms them so much, because if they can't run the ball, it puts Walford under attack. The second Walford's under attack is usually when he gets hit and when he gets knocked out. I mean, this is why you probably end up with a quarterback controversy. And Kendall Hinton, who's more of a mobile guy, seems like he's someone who could be plugged in. I know we went after Jamie Newman, who's a true freshman. I could really see him, if you know, shit hits the fan by midseason for Wake. I could see Newman actually getting plugged in here to continue Wake's you know, quarterback carousel that they seem to go through.
I think if you took BC's running backs, and I don't really know what BC's offensive line's like, but I'm assuming it's decent because it's BC, and put that with Wake's passing game, I think they actually might have something.
Oh, yeah. No, they would, I think they should just fold, like, the dual programs and just have one program this year.
All right, I'm with it. I mean, that wouldn't be great for Syracuse. I actually hope they don't do that. But if I was the AD at BC or Wake, I would start seeing, you know, how the machinations of this would work.
Yeah, the Boston Forest Demon Deagles.
Maybe get, you know, a nice dual degree program going, because it's for the student athletes. This is all about enriching the lives of our student athletes.
So I guess moving on from Wake Forest,
the demon Beagles.
The Demon Beagles. It's just a dog with horns riding a motorcycle.
I'm pretty sure there's like a later generation Pokemon that's basically that.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. So Dan, looking at the schedule here, all being super realistic, I got them 3-1 in the non-conference, the Tulane Delaware Army. I got them losing at Indiana because I think Indiana is actually pretty talented, especially on offense. And we'll get into this, I don't buy NC State either, so I'm giving them a win against the Wolfpack. I'm giving them a win against Virginia. We're at 5 now. The BC game decides bowl eligibility in the final week.
I struggle to give them the NC State game. Just as, like, I feel like NC State is sits and sits in perpetuity, and they should beat Wake Forest. Tulane, for sure. Delaware, for sure. I agree with you on Indiana. No, Indiana. Indiana is, like, hopefully the floor of what Syracuse under Babers would be. Like, they're not great, but...
But I'll
like
take Kevin Warren from Indiana as like a
they have their system, they're fun. Like if Babers dot like I wouldn't be happy if Babers dot Syracuse to Kevin Wilson, Indiana, and I hope that the process is quicker than that. But I hope that things can't be worse than that. I think that's fair. Indiana also has to play like the ridiculous Big Ten East, which sucks. Army, yeah, they'll beat Army. Virginia, they should. Like, I feel like Virginia, there's a chance that, like, Mendenhall is just like, wait, all this talent's here. Why did they always suck? And turns them into something decent. But apparently, like, the early reports haven't been great, as far as I can tell. That might take a little while. And there's also a chance that talent just kind of ran out because London's recruiting really fell off in a big way down the stretch. And I already have them beating BC. So I'm going to give them...
This is dicey. I don't feel as good about this bet anymore.
6.5 is a lot. Like, I don't see where 7 is. I don't see where you get 7. I think 6 is the absolute ceiling.
Well, because 7 assumes you go 3-1 in the swing games.
Yeah, and has this team, like, shown that? Like,
no.
I don't see it. 7-1, to get to 7 wins, what's your path? Tulane, Delaware, at NC State for sure, Army, Virginia, BC, and then you have to beat one of Indiana on the road. You have to, at Duke on the road, which I don't think they're going to do.
Or Louisville.
So maybe us, but like...
I'm talking myself into it now, then. That's not good.
So now we see why it's at 6.5. I still feel very good about the under on that. I can see why people are a little more optimistic. I feel like this is kind of like an on-paper thing, and when they actually play, we're going to be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're Wake.
Yeah, I'm going to give them 5. I don't know what 5 they are. I'm going to take the positivity that we've expressed for the Demon Deacons / the Demon Beagles here, and I'm going to give them 5 just out of courtesy. And I realize now that even if they win 5 games, I think my brother's 4 years at college would have been like a grand total of, I don't even know how many wins. Not many.
Still probably more than I experienced when I was there.
Ooh. Sorry, John. Sorry to bring that up.
Yeah, that's right. The back 3 years of Greg.
And the last year of P, which was...
The first year of Marone.
No, you weren't there for P. Marone, yeah. That was that your year mixed up. And the first year of Marone, which was four wins. And there were four great wins. We really enjoyed them.
No, I was fine with that. All right. So we're going to skip NC State. Half because you and me didn't have anything positive to say about them anyway. This is a team that recruits top 40 talent and plays like their top 60 talent. They also have no ability to recruit a quarterback, though maybe Jalen McClendon is a guy. I think Matt Days is a very good running back. And, yeah, that's all I got. I don't think NC State is going bowling this year.
I'm not even looking at their schedule. I'm going to assume they're going to go 6-6.
Okay.
Next.
Next.
We kind of need to get through this. Sorry, yeah. NC State fans, but you guys are the boringest team in the world.
Yeah, we got 10-ish minutes to talk about like three teams that are probably going to win like
good.
Nine games.
Two teams that are legitimate playoff contenders, and Louisville, who might go to like a New Year's Six Bowl if things break right.
That's exactly what this podcast is.
we spend 25 minutes on the Demon Beagles, and then we rush through the important teams.
Of course.
I think we did this backwards.
Yeah, probably. Well, that's where we're going to continue from the bottom up, Louisville. Everybody's high on Louisville, and that's why I'm worried about Louisville. That said, I think they have top 35, top 40 talent. I think Lamar Jackson...
Could be very good.
Could be very good, but I think everyone's a little too sold on the hype so far.
Agree. He runs like he's a crazy runner.
You know, he's
passing,
great.
We'll see. But he absolutely, all right, so he absolutely torched, was it A&M in the bowl game last year?
Yes.
Yeah, he just did ungodly things to A&M. And A&M does have some nice defenders. A&M's defense was also a train wreck last year. I know they have John Chavis, and he should improve things. This isn't an A&M preview, so we'll see. I think the talent is definitely there, though.
Yeah, I think the talent's there for Jackson. I think they have a great running back situation. Ratcliffe in particular tore us up. I think Staples and Quick are about as good of a 1-2 punch as you're going to find in this conference. The only one that passes it up is probably Clemson's 1-2 punch with Bryant and Williams. I think the line replaces some pieces, but not enough to disrupt things. And then the defense replaces just about nobody. So, you know, Devontae Fields is going to lead a very terrifying defense. I still don't know if they turn into full Petrino ball here. I still think they might be led by their defense, but that might not be a bad thing for Petrino as a coach, for this program overall, to kind of figure out a new reality and still be able to win. They really didn't challenge themselves in non-conference other than at Houston, which I think that's really where this season kind of, you know, gets the pass or fail. If you buy the hype, if they beat Houston, they're probably a 10-win team. If they don't, they're hanging around 8 or 9. It also depends on how much you have buy into Houston's hype.
Yeah, I'm buying in on Houston, and I know I've been like very skeptical on a lot of these teams. I think Houston is. Like, I think they overachieved last year, but I think that there's a chance they actually improve this year and, like, kind of live up to the hype, especially because I don't think the AAC can possibly be as good as it was last year. We already did it at AAC, though. So, yeah, Louisville, it kind of sucks that they have to play that team
that late
in the second to last week. Yeah. They'll beat Charlotte. They should beat us, although it wouldn't be crazy if that was a kind of trap game. With Florida State the next week, they'll win at Marshall. I don't think they're going to win at Clemson. Duke is tricky. Yeah. They bring Duke in.
I think Duke will for it down here.
That's possible. NC State they'll beat. Virginia they'll beat. BC they'll beat. Wake Forest they'll beat. I don't know about Houston. That's like it feels like I feel like these two teams are on similar planes. And then they'll beat Kentucky. So that's what that's nine wins.
It's 8-9 wins. Like this team gets 8 or 9 wins, and that's my only problem with Louisville is that. They're not going to get tested very often. When they do, I don't see them doing well. So how good are they?
Yeah, there's such a big drop after Florida State and Clemson that I just don't see them being at the point where I mean they host Florida State, right? Like they bring in Florida State.
Yeah.
I mean, if DeAndre Francois doesn't materialize and Sean McGuire doesn't take like a weird senior step forward that doesn't seem like he's going to, maybe they can get that one. But I think Dalvin Cook's just too good, and Florida State, so much talent and defense. I think that could be a close game again, like it was a few years ago in Louisville. I think that was a random Thursday night game. I think Louisville was wearing black, and they picked off Jameis Winston a bunch. It was an interesting game.
But it's always Thursday night games that do that shit.
Yeah, so maybe they steal that one, but I really don't see them beating Clemson in Death Valley. I feel pretty good about this being an 8-9 win team. I don't think this. I think that's probably the floor, unless things go really, really sour. And maybe they can win like 10 or 11. But I think that's asking a little much.
Yeah, I'd agree there. Next, do you want to do FSU or Clemson? I guess that really depends on which team you think is winning the conference.
I'm riding with Clemson. I think when in doubt, you take the quarterback, and I don't think the talent differential is that big in favor of Florida State everywhere else. And the quarterback, even if Francois is really good, I don't think he's going to be in the same galaxy as Deshaun Watson this year. And then Clemson has plenty of talent elsewhere. Crazy receivers. They have Gallman, who broke out in a big way at the end of last year. Their offense could be one of the best in college football, if not the best. So I just trust Clemson a lot more. But Florida State should be really good.
All right. I'll start with Florida State because I think Florida State is going to not only win the conference, but make the playoff. I think Florida State returns a ton. I think that it's great to have returning talent at receiver. It makes up for the fact that you aren't returning talent at quarterback. The offensive line is pretty much back with a boatload of experience. Dalvin Cook's back, which automatically means you have an advantage on anyone you go up against. At least 4.5 or so. I think the defense, the way that this team is kind of just churned out 4-star players and really kind of plugged in a lot of younger guys early so they can get good experience for the year after when they jump up in the depth chart, I think is great, and it's a hallmark of what Jimbo's done there. I think in general, this division is going to come down to a stupid tiebreaker. I could see Florida State beating Clemson by a hair and getting through because they were able to run through the rest of the ACC. But both teams maybe going 11-1. I could see Florida State easily losing to Ole Miss. I think Florida State's early schedule really kind of decides what they do. I think they're tested more than anybody in the conference over the course of the first probably 6 weeks. You get Ole Miss, Charleston Southern's a win, but then at Louisville, at South Florida, you get North Carolina, and then at Miami. If Florida State is 5-1 or better, they are a very easy, in my mind, playoff pick. If you're 5-1 or better after October 8th.
Yeah, that Ole Miss team is that's such a tough way to start the year, especially with a new quarterback. Because Ole Miss, I don't think their defense is going to be what it's been the last couple of years. They lose a ton of talent, but they should have a really good offense. Obviously, they have Chad Kelly, who's probably one of the 5 best quarterbacks in college football. Out of nowhere, by the way, as of last year. So that's just a really tough draw, even if they have like a crowd advantage there. But after that, like you said, this is just really tough. They have Miami, obviously, as a crossover rival. Miami, I don't think they'll be ready to take down Florida State, but you never know. If there's a game that fans at Miami get up for, it's this one, and they'll have the emotion of like Mark Richt's first game, first Florida State game, obviously. Back at his alma mater, at South Florida, South Florida almost like kind of gives him fits a little bit, and South Florida could be really good. They obviously have to go to Louisville, like we talked about just a little while before. At NC State, I know neither of us are super high on NC State, but like that's been a weird game in the past. So yeah, this is and then Florida at the end. I'm not in love with the Florida Gators, but they're really talented. So yeah, this is a minefield of games. I think they are talented enough to win 10 if their quarterback situation shakes out and Francois is like a really solid first year starter, or if Sean McGuire is just like a really nice placeholder, which I don't have a lot of faith in the latter, they could be a 10 or 11 game winner. But otherwise, I think they're just a notch below Clemson just in terms of like the top end of their roster.
Fair enough. And I think for Clemson, a lot of that's just because of what returns, I think, on offense in particular. All the key pieces are back. Everyone forgets that Mike Williams really didn't play last year.
And he's one of the 10 best receivers in college football, if he's healthy?
Yeah.
Maybe that's even, like, too low?
Yeah, I'd say top five. Him and Martavis Scott are probably in it. I apologize earlier for mentioning Martavis Bryant. But, yeah.
I didn't even catch it, so.
It's fine. I'm sure a Clemson fan is already...
Oh, God, you already have an email, and this isn't even posted yet. Jay Slater. Jay Slater's all over this.
Listen, Northerners, no, it's fine. I actually live further south in the country than Clemson is, so...
Oh, shots fired.
Yeah. But, yeah, between Scott, Williams, Wayne Gallman, and Adam Choice are both great options at running back.
Hunter Renfro, the god.
This is, I mean... Admittedly, the offense is loaded where I'm going to ask some questions, and I really shouldn't doubt Venables at this point, is on defense where, you know, again, they lost a ton of talent pretty much everywhere. I mean, you're looking at Ben Bolwer is really your kind of stalwart from last year. Just about everybody else is replaced. That's really where the question marks come in, because I think, you know, you saw – I didn't consider Alabama to be an explosive offensive team last year, and Alabama was able to do some real damage. South Carolina sucked on offense and defense last year and was able to do some damage. Syracuse was able to put up points against Clemson's defense. North Carolina, obviously. Even Georgia Tech, like, I mean, before that whole team fell apart, NC State put up points. So, like, I really respected and still do respect what Clemson did on defense and what Venables has been able to do since he arrived, you know, after that horrific bowl loss. But at the same time, I don't know if they're due for a little bit of a step back, if only because of so much replacement. And obviously last year, even though those guys were really good, they also had their moments where, you know, you could second guess them.
Yeah, I think that's the one concern, is if this team turns into, like, one that has to win shootouts versus last year where they were super balanced. But they do have Venables, who's been pretty stellar the last couple of years, like you said, and they've had no problem. Like they lost a lot of defensive end talent a couple of years ago, and they replaced it, and Kevin Dodd turned into an absolute monster, and Shaq Lawson turned into an All-American. And this year, they have plenty of 4- and 5-star guys to plug back in. Christian Wilkins could be one of the best defensive tackles in the country. I think their interior line is, like, strangely strong. Defensive end, they obviously lose a lot with those two guys that I mentioned before. But then, you know, they have Ben Bolwer, which is as good a solid linebacker that you're doing as you're going to get, super productive. I just think there's a lot of talent here. There's a chance they do give up more points, but with the offense that they have, I'm not too worried about them not being able to drop like 40 on most teams if they need. But, you know, when it gets to the playoff, that could be an issue.
Yeah, I agree with you that they might be a notch above Florida State in terms of talent, but I don't know, like, how big that notch is, I guess. I would bet it's not that big of a difference. I think that they're better on offense. I don't know if they are on defense, and that
I think FSU is more talented on defense.
Right.
I think Clemson has a better quarterback. I think Clemson has better receivers. Florida State probably has a better running back, even though I do like Goleman a lot. I think Florida State probably has more talented depth. Like, I think if you just average out the entire roster. But if you're going to ask me to choose between that and Deshaun Watson, I'm going to take Deshaun Watson.
I'll buy it.
this is so complimentary of Clemson. I apologize to everyone. It's very off-brand. Super off-brand.
Well, that's why I'll change that. I am in the Bill Connolly school of defensive experience matters more. I've got these two teams at 11-1, and I've got Florida State winning the conference, and I've got Florida State going to the playoff. And that's not even despite Clemson. It's just to say that I think that Cook and whoever ends up being the quarterback will be able to get it done. They're not going to win as pretty as Clemson is going to, but I think that Florida State's defense is going to be able to guide them through better than it did last year. And better than Clemson's will this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that. And there's also a chance that Dalvin Cook's the best player in college football. I'm not saying that's the fact. That's a fact. I'm saying that it is definitely on the table.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it. I think this was fairly productive considering that there's only really one team we didn't talk about at length.
Syracuse, well, NC State, yeah, who cares?
Well, yeah, we're not talking about Syracuse now. Because if we talk about I knew if we talked about Syracuse at all, it would derail the rest of the episode.
And we have a whole podcast for that. I mean, that's most of these episodes. So
it's actually usually our most listened to podcast of the year.
Ooh, looking forward to that.
Based on the numbers I've seen,
looking forward to winning everyone back over after 51 weeks of like everyone being like, why do we listen to this?
I mean, I feel like if you started asking that question, you stopped in like week 3.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. So Dan, thank you as always for joining. It was a pleasure.
Yes, always. I look forward to the Coastal next year. Next week, when we're all like, oh, these teams did all win 8 games.
All.
Except for Virginia.
I mean, it's theoretically they could all win 8 games. They just win all 4 non-conference games and then go 4-4 in the division. It's perfect.
I'm for it. I'm with it.
Yeah, I think that Coastal Chaos is fine. But anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thanks for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, anywhere else you might listen to us. And yeah, talk to you next week. Go Orange.
Go Orange.
Hey.